Welcome to the PIO Podcast, a place for all things public information related for police, fire, EMS, and local government. An open forum to learn, grow, and develop your public information skills. Your host, Robert Tornabene, is a public information officer with over 10 years in the field and 27 years of law enforcement background. In each episode, we will explore different aspects of the public information officer profession. Weekly, we will delve into the field of public information by talking to other PIOs. So sit back and enjoy this episode.
Good evening. Tonight on the PIO Podcast for episode 47, we have Toronto Police Service Constable Lori McCann. Welcome to the show, Lori.
Thanks for having me, Robert. I'm excited to be here.
Lori, you have been somebody that we've wanted to get on the show for a while now, and we're glad you finally were able to connect. So you are the coffee cop. You want to explain that?
I am. Yeah. So the coffee cop, kind of, it's interesting how that came about, but I am known to drink a lot of coffee. This is true. I am addicted to it. You've heard it here first. And it was one of those handles that I just picked, and I'm so glad I did, because it stuck with me. That's just who I am. And if I ever stopped drinking coffee, there'd be problems. I don't know what we would do. Yeah.
Yeah, coffee is lifeblood.
Oh, it is.
So, Lori, you are one of the social media specialists with TPS. How did you get into that?
So I'm one of the social media officers. For approximately 7 years, I did teach our social media and communications course alongside of our corporate communication office. So how I got into it was many moons ago, I want to say about 12 years ago, I was a crime analyst for a couple of years at a division. And one of the mandates was to have a social media account. And at first I was like, I don't have time for this stuff. I got my own my own personal accounts. I just, no, how am I going to find time to do this? And then I just kind of really enjoyed it, interacting with the public, because having private accounts is totally different than having obviously public facing accounts, and interacting with the public in our communities. And I mean, there's always the good and the bad that come with it. And then corporate communications kind of picked up on the work I was doing, asked me to help them out with a few things, and it just kind of blossomed from there. So social media has always been kind of my side gig on top of whatever regular job I was doing or I am doing. But yeah, it's something that I think will follow me till the end of my career. It's just, I love doing it. So I am one of our social media officers. We have many, but I'm one of the ones only because I taught the course. Do most people know me? Because you do have to have a 3-day course to have a social media account with our service.
Currently, where are you stationed at? Were you at the Command College? Are you still there?
I was. I moved last year during COVID. I'm now at one of our downtown divisions, 52 division.
Lori, you are a strong advocate for social media education for young people.
Absolutely.
What do young people do wrong with engaging other people online?
I don't know if I want to use the word wrong. I don't want them to think I'm scolding them, but what they do or don't think of as most, I mean, even adults make these mistakes. It's understanding that what you see isn't always what you get, that there's so many people out there that can pretend to be somebody else and not to interact with strangers. Kids have a very bad habit of allowing anybody and everybody into their accounts, not checking really through those accounts on who's behind them. They take everything for face value. Like, oh, well, they said their name's Joe. It must be Joe. So they have a really bad habit of doing that. And it's wrong because you can get yourself in a lot of danger and trouble. And then the other thing that, and COVID didn't help this, is they put their whole life online, which I don't recommend, right? Because once it's out there, there is no getting it back. I my biggest thing that I teach on all my courses for kids and adults, delete does not exist. I know you might see a little button on your computer that says it and on your phone, but once it's out there, it can be screen grabbed, it can be you name it. Someone else can download it. Yeah, delete doesn't exist.
Yeah, when I used to do education, specifically on social media for kids in the schools, when I was an SRO years ago, one of the things that I always talked about is the stuff that's in the background of your photos can quickly identify you or quickly point somebody to the direction of where you live or where you go to school. But it's to the point where most young people, sometimes they post that stuff right in front of their school. Once you know their school, it's not hard to track down the student. It's just very difficult. They don't necessarily see it as just a bad habit to have, but they're giving away so much information that puts them at risk.
Yeah, and that's funny you mentioned that, because that's one of the key points I always give them as well. Be cognizant of what's around you when you're taking a photo, a street name, your house number, a license plate in one of your parents' cars. If you're wearing a uniform, like my kids, if they took a picture in their uniform, sorry, you can't post it because you're giving away way too much information. So yes, it's funny that you mentioned that, because that is one of the key points. And they don't think of that. The kids don't think of the adults don't think of that.
No, they don't. And it's amazing. We're just so used to sharing it out there and putting it out in public. It's unfortunate that there are people out there that prey on that, but they're there, and we have to be real. We have to be realistic. And as a PIO, we have to make sure that we're careful about on our private stuff, because, you know, you could show a picture of yourself drinking on Facebook, and that'll turn around and be used against you later on by a lawyer or by, you know, somebody in the news media, and that could impact
100%, 100%. And I think kids, I mean, they're more tech savvy than we are. They can take photos and they can, cover things up. And I think another key thing, and this just happened with one of my kids recently, get permission before you post a photo, because that other person may not want that posted. And it happened with my daughter. Her friend posted a picture without her permission. She got really upset about it, asked her to delete it. But always get permission, because parents might not be happy with what you're posting, or they don't want their kids online, you know, and vice versa.
There's a phrase for that. I forget what the phrase is specifically about asking for permission. It's, I cannot think of it now. It has to do with respecting others' identity and their rights and so on, without just putting it out there. I can't think of the name of it now at this time, but either way, it's. I think it's important. We need to listen. We need to interact with people on social media. That's really imperative. Are there examples you've had, since you've been a social media person for so long, where somebody, a user, has reached out to you, or, you know, and given you information about either they need help or a crime?
Several times. So I actually had a young person, and you wonder, well, why are they reaching out to me when they're at home with their parents? Because the key thing is, as parents, what do we do? You got in trouble online, give me your phone, right? And they take it away, and that's their fear. Their phone is their lifeline. So I've had kids as young as grade 6 that reached out. They had somebody who had asked them for a photo, and she didn't know what to do. And I said, well, don't send it. Send me their account. And I said, just block them and do not send the photos. And she said, okay, thank you. And then I said, and it's time for bed. Why are you still up? And she said, yes, officer, I'm going to bed. And then I just did a simple, and it's a little thing, but 2 days later, maybe, I checked in with her. How are things going? And she's like, thank you so much for reaching out. It's a huge deal for them. And what does that do? Did that take 5 minutes out of my time in total? Maybe that's it. And it builds that trust between the community and the police, right? And you want that trust at that age. So that's happened. Yes, I've gotten information about crimes and stuff, and I've had to put reports in, because you can't just leave that. That's happened a few times, or many times, I should say. But yeah, I've had a few, and they're usually youth. I've had one adult reach out asking for help.
So let's talk about that. So let's talk briefly about the Amanda Todd story and why it's important for the public to know about it. And can you go ahead and give us the whole story?
So I met posthumously, I met her mom, Carol Todd, an amazing, amazing woman. She had come to Toronto. I'm not sure. I can't remember why she was down, but I had the opportunity through a good friend of mine, Scott Mills, who used to be on the job, had brought her, and I'd met her. And we just kind of instantly connected. Her daughter basically was, we call it sextortion. So people go, don't you mean extortion? No, I mean sextortion. Again, groomed and on a chat group with someone she thought was 16, basically lifted her top up. It took all of 2 seconds for him to screen grab that. And what most people don't realize is that that picture didn't instantly end up on the internet. He hung on to it for a year And then when he found her on Facebook, that's when the sextortion started, threatening her that he was going to post the picture, and he did post it. And then the bullying started. So with that photo being posted on her Facebook and all of her friends and family being tagged in it, the bullying at school started online and in person. Ultimately, I won't go into all the details, but ultimately with that bullying and everything that had happened, she took her own life. So she had put a video at the age of 13, she had taken her life. And what people need to understand is back then, we didn't have all the apps that we have now. She had just gotten a cell phone shortly before she had taken her life. It wasn't like she'd always had this phone and what the kids have now. It was nothing like that. And it was very unfortunate. Mom and dad tried to do everything they could to help her, but it was just too much for her. And her mom is now a huge advocate. She has the Amanda Todd Legacy Foundation and does a lot of work on bullying, on sextortion, on internet safety. She's an amazing woman, but it's unfortunate that she had lost her daughter in the process at such a young age.
Truly tragic. And there are many other stories that are similar in nature, and it tugs at everybody's heartstrings, and yet some of this is preventable in a sense if we educate and we teach young people that they need to go and ask for help when these things start to occur, and also teach them about not putting up imagery that is inappropriate. And
100%. I mean, the end result with this case is it took a while, but they did locate the suspect, and there was about 35 other victims. They didn't take their lives, but that had been sextorted by him. So he's now awaiting extradition to come to Canada for his charges here with Amanda, but he was convicted in Amsterdam of those charges. I wouldn't say it's not a happy ending, but it's a bit of closure.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. So, Lori, you are a master proponent for self-care, mental health, and suicide prevention. How did you get involved in that?
Personally, it affects me personally with my daughter. So I kind of started with that, and then with, working with Carol Todd and all the work we do there with schools. And I've lost 5 friends to suicide. It was just something, and I had a good friend of mine, we're still friends, that struggled for many years with suicidal attempts, suicidal ideation, self-harm, you name it. And I thought, we need to talk about it. It can't be that thing that's whispered in the corner. And the more we talk, the louder we are, the more normalized it will be. So the big factor for me was my daughter, and I didn't want her to think that she had to be ashamed of her mental health and her struggles, and that she should be open to and be able to talk about it without having that stigma. Now, we've come a long way. We still have a long way to go. And even with, my own mental health of dealing with my daughter and everyday life struggles, I run. That's my thing. So I started, posting about that. That's what works for me. Everyone has their niche. Mine's running. That's what clears my head. So I think it's important that we just keep talking, and we have to keep talking. It's not a once a year thing where we have a special day. And people know, and it has happened several times because of the work I do. And I've educated myself more so on mental health and all of the diseases that go with it, and how to help people, and knowing the connections that I can make for people. And I've had many people reach out asking for help, which I'm no doctor. I will always say I'm not a doctor, but I am happy to help somebody if I can.
And that's awesome that you take that time out to help somebody that might be struggling. I mean, in my own former department, we lost 2 officers to suicide. And I have had a couple of friends over the years commit suicide in different ways. So it's always present in people's lives. They may not realize it so readily, but especially in law enforcement, we struggle dramatically with the amount of suicide
the suicide. And then we see things that you can't unsee, that most people in their lifetime would never see.
Yes.
And then it's how do you handle that, and how do you cope?
So, Laura, you're a runner for the National Peace Officers Memorial Run, correct?
That's correct. That right? Yes.
And so, but let me ask you a question. Did you get connected to that through helping a coworker that ended up having a heart attack? Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Funny story there. So I always, funny, not so funny, but I always wanted to do the run, but it was one of those things, you know, it was back in my mind. I never got around to it. And then I was doing a paid duty, so extra hours at a marathon. I wasn't actually running it. I was working it. And one of the runners collapsed right in front of me, obviously with the help of bystanders. Thankfully, there was a doctor watching his wife run, so that was helpful. And then with a paramedic showing up with the AED, we did CPR for 7 minutes on him. And he was basically clinically dead. And then the AED is what brought his heart back and saved his life. So somebody said, he's a cop. I'm like, no, I didn't believe them. I was like, no, he's not. I actually called the station to get them to run his name because I didn't believe them. I'm like, he's not a cop. So I actually went and met him the next day. And it was social media. Two things that happened there. One of the doctors that showed up in while we were doing CPR assisted, and he was gone as fast as he got there. And I'm like, well, and somebody stopped to take a photo of us. So I grabbed the photo. I just took the doctor and then I put it on social media. I wanted to put him in for an award, but I didn't have his name. 12 hours it took me from that post on Twitter to get his name and where he worked. So that worked out. And then I just put a tweet out to say, you know, I helped save a life, you know, at the Toronto Marathon. And that kind of went crazy and media started calling and it kind of went from there. So his name's Andrew and we met the next day and have been friends ever since. But he was doing the run, the National Peace Officers Memorial Run. So I'm like, that's it. I have to do it. So the first year I did it, and Andrew had given me his running watch, the one he was wearing the day he collapsed. So I had that as a gift. And we ran together, which was really cool. And I've done it now. I'll be going into my 8th year. And I'm now the team captain so he's for Toronto, one of them. So you see how that happens. Wow. Yeah, so that's kind of how that all took place.
That's awesome. What a great feeling to turn something that could have been really tragic into such a great positive moment in your life.
Yeah.
And then it uplifts you to start running marathons. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So let's lighten this up a little bit. Let's go to some rapid fire questions here. Your favorite drink of choice, right?
Is coffee.
Is there a type of coffee or is it just coffee?
Some people think because my handle's a coffee cop that I should be liking some fancy dancy coffee. And I don't. I'm all about McDonald's coffee. Now, if I'm at Starbucks, yeah, I do order something like most men will be like, I'm not getting that for you. That's just no, I'm not ordering that. It's embarrassing. But yeah, it's usually just like McDonald's. McDonald's coffee is my favorite.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Do you have a sweet tooth? What's your guilty pleasure?
Oh boy. Chocolate covered almonds.
Dark chocolate or milk chocolate?
No milk chocolate. I've tried dark chocolate. I just can't do it. I can't do it.
What's a must read book in your mind?
Must read one. I just saw actually online, posted by a friend of mine, the 20 Year War. And it's about, that started with 9/11.
Oh, okay. Excellent. I'll have to put that down on my reading list.
It's military and people that have basically been overseas since and their firsthand accounts of what they've dealt with in the last 20 years.
Excellent. I'll add that to the reading list. If you could have coffee with a historic figure, who would you choose?
Oh. Elvis Presley, that guy interests me.
Oh.
He had an interesting life.
The king, absolutely.
The king, yeah.
And what would be your superpower if you had one?
Oh, superpower. I'm going to say mind reading. Might be a bad thing to have, but yeah.
Yeah, I can see where that could go bad in certain
things. I could go wrong.
Yeah, I can see where that could go wrong. But yeah, that would be would also be nice.
Yeah.
Especially if you're playing cards, right?
Exactly.
All right. Two questions and then we'll wrap it up. Give me like five things that we can, as social media people, we can do to educate young people about being safe on social media.
Okay. Five things. Locations off. Private account. I can't say that enough. Private, private, private. settings, always go through all of the settings to lock your accounts down. If you're under the age of 15, you should not have a profile picture of yourself. Why? Because you're making it just that much easier for the bad people out there and the pedophiles to know that you're underage. Do not allow somebody you do not know into your account. Just because you have a mutual friend does not mean that that mutual friend knows that person.
Excellent.
So do yeah.
Yep, you
is that
me
five?
Yep. I think so. One, more? Two, three, four, five. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. That was awesome. Okay. Way to throw those out there. I didn't have that question on the list. So way to go.
No, you did not.
Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think, I mean, I absolutely love what I do. And in some aspects, I mean, I teach young people, and I think that's my favorite of all favorite, because, you know, they sit there and listen. If you can get a room full of young, you know, even youth, like at the age of 14, to be quiet for an hour, I think my job is done, because they're actually listening to me. And when they talk in the hall, they're not going to really ask me questions while I'm there, but they do talk in the hall, and you know, my job's done. And even with adults, because they're always learning, right? Most of us grew up with typewriters, and this internet thing is just, and social media is still mind-boggling for a lot of adults. So if I can educate them to keep themselves safe on top of their kids, then, you know, it's a good feeling.
Awesome. Lori, how can people best reach out to you if they want to connect?
Well, that's pretty, so I made it easy. So I'm at The Coffee Cop on all platforms. So Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can DM me. I do respond to them. It may not be right away, but I do. Yeah, that's the easiest way to get hold of me.
Excellent. I will make sure I put that in the show notes, and I'm sure you'll get some people reaching out to you if they already don't know you, because a lot of our listeners are already probably connected to you.
Yeah. Well, I'm honored that you asked me to come on here, and I'm glad you did. I mean, it took us a bit to get together, but we're both busy people, and I love what you do. So keep doing it.
Thank you, Lori. I appreciate it. And that's Lori McCann from the Toronto Police Service. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
That is episode 47. Tonight's guest was Lori McCann from the Toronto Police Service. Thank you for coming on the show. This will be the last episode for this year in season one of the PIO podcast. We will be taking holidays off, and we will return in January of 2022. Until then, you can re-listen to the past episodes of the podcast. If you are interested in hearing a specific guest for 2022, please forward their names to us at thepiopodcast@gmail.com. Until next year, be safe.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you would like to contact the show, please email us at thepiopodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to get notified of the latest episode. If you are listening on a platform that allows reviews, please give us a review. We appreciate any review, good or bad. It helps us improve on each episode. Until next time, be safe.